Good morning.
We're all awake. I want to say thank you for the invitation to offer some thoughts this morning. It's been a few years, has it not? And I have to say to my friend Rob, it's so lovely to walk up the aisle the same height as my teammate. Some of you will get that. So, a long, long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, these are the words that begin every Star Wars movie. And I know there are a few Star Wars fans here in the choir. And I recognize that not everyone is a fan or even has heard of this cinema phenomenon or even cares. However, in the recent Star Wars: The Last Jedi, this movie speaks about the spiritual experience rather than religion as a whole. And in fact, The Last Jedi, Luke Skywalker, presents a grave spiritual issue to a student. And he indicates to her that she must find the force, the heart energy within herself. The force, God. And he is insisting that religion, and in this case, the Jedi mythology, has run its course and something new must be pursued. Now, I don't intend to give any more away, but just to say to you that every time I encounter a Star Wars film, I feel like I'm entering into a theological adventure about the merits and possibilities, as well as the change and cost involved in the following of the Force, and in following a divine force. And for me, that is the Christ. Which brings us to the topic of the day. Following. Follow me. Follow me. We don't speak very often about following in our culture. We like to talk about the demands and the gifts of leadership far more often. Our society places a high value on promoting a culture of smart, productive, ambitious people. So it stands to reason that competent leadership is one of the qualities we value most highly. Now, if we are speaking about our friends to the south, the definition of a great leader is definitely up for discussion. And today, I'm speaking kindly. I would like to say that Mr. T moves to the beat of his own drum. In our society, we speak very little about the spiritual discipline of following. Following is not a skill that we tend to reflect on, unless it's someone inviting us to follow them on Facebook or Twitter. I do Facebook, I don't tweet, just so you know. Now, most sermons on this text, and I've preached my fair share in 32 years, love to wonder about the disciples. And those of us who are not so gifted at following wonder why anyone would simply drop what they're doing and begin following someone down an uncertain road. It doesn't seem very self-reliant or independent. Not what a strong individual would do. And so we might speculate. Did the disciples know Jesus before this moment? Had they been to one of his rallies? Perhaps they'd had some prior experience with him before they made that big leap. Fishing was a great way to make a living and a lot of fun, even in the times of the disciples. So why would they want to give up such a good deal just to follow a ragged prophet? Maybe he offered them a way out of a mundane and unexciting existence. Perhaps they truly desired a wider life than the one they happened to be living at the moment. This story has helped to define what it means to take a leap of faith. The disciples were normal guys, fishers on the Sea of Galilee. One minute, and the next, they became followers of the great Fisher King. And for some of us, it happens that way. We can point to a specific and very real moment in time in our lives when we stepped into a new reality and a new way of being. There's an old gospel hymn called "I Saw the Light" that tells a story just like that. One of the verses is, "Once I was lonely, life full of sin, I would not let my dear Savior in. But Jesus came like a stranger in the night. Praise the Lord, I saw the light." But for a whole lot more of us, the leap of faith does not come and does not take place that way, especially if you're raised in the United Church tradition. Folks in other religious traditions in the Protestant tradition may have a different experience. The invitation to follow, for most of us, has been more like a quiet walk or a lifetime of starts and stops up a long hill, or for some folks, a very large mountain. For myself, following and being on a spiritual path has seemed in many ways more like an unending spiral or a very large labyrinth than the suddenness of a conversion or that steady walk of a pilgrim. For my spiritual journey, the way has been deep and full. It has been empty and shallow. It has had times that have been flecked with doubt and despair, loaded up with heaps of grace, broken open occasionally by grief and profound joy, all the while being wrapped in a blanket of love. But I still twist on the ropes for a desire of peace and justice in our world. The phrase used in this passage to describe the disciples' response is really two words: "and immediately." Jesus said, "Follow me." And immediately, we're told, the disciples left their nets and headed off with Jesus. "And immediately" is not one, a phrase I would associate with my own call to ministry or journey of faith. That's another sermon. If you find yourself in the description of anything I have just said in the last few sentences, I'm going to say to you right now, you're sitting in a very good place. You are welcome here. William Sloan Coffin once wrote, "Faith is not a decision to believe without proof, but rather it is a decision to trust without reservation." And that leads us to another question this morning. Faith in whom or what? The subject of this morning's text is not so much about the story of the disciples, but rather it is about the God they chose to follow. There are a dozen or more, millions more, voices that call to us every day. Our culture dazzles us with choices. We're invited to shop till we drop, to accumulate wealth, to be all we can be, to be popular, thin, this is something I will never achieve, to be young forever, bold and beautiful. Oh, come on. To what or to whom may we surrender? We have only to look at the history to know how trust in the wrong leader or the wrong ideal can lead to terrible consequences. I traveled to Nuremberg a year ago, and I saw one of the, if not the most famous, stadium where Hitler worked his crowds into a frenzy by screaming "Heil Hitler," and he demanded of them such total loyalty as they followed. And they created a living hell on earth. If we surrender to the wrong thing, we may lose our own souls and damage the soul of the world. And so it's an agonizing question for us as we contemplate followership. To whom, to what do we surrender? And what might surrender look in our daily lives? As a person of faith, my model of what it means to surrender is the vision of God who is active and alive in the life of Jesus the Christ. The community into which we are invited calls for an apologetic and a compassionate spirit as we walk down the road and share in the journey. Follow me. It's a call that's compelling, it's life-changing. To trust in the power that belongs to God, as the psalmist sings, is to begin to trust in God's grace on each step of our long and winding road. I would suggest to you that Jesus is the lens through which we see our life of faith, which we long to embrace. Jesus shows me what God is like and what a godly life looks like in the shape of a human form. Jesus was intoxicated by the Spirit, and in his life we see the light of God shining in that face of a human. No wonder these poor fishers did not resist the simple invitation. Drop your nets, let's go, follow me. In Jesus, they saw the compassion and passion of God in human form, a life centered in the Spirit. And they were blown away. So what if we all lived like Jesus, with compassion and passion, holding fast to a life full of God? Joseph Campbell calls that kind of life following our bliss. Don't you love that? Following our bliss. If we were to follow our bliss from a spiritual notion, I would suggest it would be more demanding, far more complicated, and yet greatly exciting. It would be a vocational calling into a world that's full of terror and violence and trouble and tragedy. If we embrace this, we would dive deeply into growing our becoming, expanding our generosity and kindness to be more reflective, more trusting, caring, and responsive to each other's deep needs. We would be a community solely centered on relationship, on the relationship with each other, and how each and every one of us grows into God. Jesus lived a life full of God. Saint Augustine once wrote, "The glory of God is the human being fully alive." Jesus invited the disciples to become like him, and we are called to be willing to take seriously the life Jesus took seriously. Marcus Borg challenges us that if we give our hearts to God, we need to expect to be changed by God, to have a life of the Spirit. You can't just give your heart or your commitment to God without expecting your life to change. As followers, we are in life companionship with God. The Marble Arch at Washington Square in New York City has stood for a couple of hundred years now. And many years ago, on a trip to the Big Apple, I wandered through this marble arch, not realizing at the time its importance. It's the entrance of one of the grand old parks of New York. And it's a crossroads. It's designed to be a resting place, a place where folks often ended up and still end up congregating when an issue is at hand. And inscribed in the arch, which you can't see in this picture, "For all the world to see," are these two sentences: "Let us raise the standard to which the wise and the honest can repair. The event is in the hand of God." We cannot see into the future. Fairlawn Avenue United Church is at its own crossroads. We cannot know exactly where we're going as a congregation, as a faith community, but we do know with whom we are going. When those four fellows left their nets, they were being asked to raise the standard to which they were called, to be wise and honest. And without stopping to ponder what it would cost or what was beyond the horizon, they followed. As we continue to step into the future, may we be as bold and as faithful to learn to love and embrace God, where we can follow our bliss and it be God's bliss, and to be fully alive, and that our aliveness be reflected in that which is our passion, which is love and justice lived out in our world.